Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to continue reading from the NALC Constitution. We are on to Article 5, which governs elections. And this is definitely relevant to me because I don't know if you've heard, I'm running for office. I'm running for the office of Vice President, Branch 2502, along with my running mates, Michael Brazemley for President, and Jonathan Munoz for Executive Vice President. So anyway, let's find out what these rules are. Article 5, Elections, Section 1. The provisions of this article shall govern the election of all delegates and alternate delegates to the National Association Convention and to the State Association Convention. Section 2. All qualified regular members shall be eligible to be a delegate or alternate delegate to the National Association Convention or State Convention, except that any regular member who voluntarily or otherwise holds, accepts, or applies for a supervisory position in the Postal Service for any period of time, whether one day or fraction thereof, either detailed, acting, probationary, or permanently, shall immediately vacate any office held and shall be ineligible to run for any office or to be a delegate to any convention for a period of 2 years after the termination of such supervisory status. Holy crap, that was all one sentence saying that if you are in any way a supervisor, you are not welcome. All right, moving on. Upon nomination, the candidate must certify that they have not served in a supervisory capacity for the 24 months prior to the nomination. No supervisors allowed. Section 3. All regular members in good standing of the respective subordinate branch shall be entitled to one vote for each delegate and alternate delegate position to be filled. Section 4. Election of delegates and alternate delegates to the National and State Association Convention shall be made no later than December of the year preceding the convention year. No less than 45 days before each election, the secretary shall mail to every member at their last known address notice of the election, stating that the election for National and State Association delegate and alternate shall be held at the time, place, and manner for nomination and election. For purposes of this provision, the requirement that notices be mailed may be satisfied by publication of the notice in the postal record or in state or branch publications that are mailed to the last known address of the member. All right, so again, this is for being elected as a delegate to the national or state convention. And it looks like anybody can be voted on to be a delegate. Like, there are some restrictions in my local bylaws that say if you want to be a paid delegate where the branch pays for your travel, then you have to have attended at least 8 meetings each of the last 2 years, 8 branch meetings. But this just says you have to be elected to be a delegate. So that is good to know. Next, Section 5. Each regular member shall have the right to nominate a candidate for the National and State Association delegate or alternate delegate. B. Each candidate shall be nominated at a regular or special meeting of the branch not less than 4 weeks before the date of the election, but not less than 10 days after the notice of nomination and elections has been sent out. A branch may, however, provide in its bylaws that nominations may be made in writing with the nomination to be received by the secretary not less than 30 days before the date of the election. So if you can't make it to the branch meeting, you can still be nominated to be a delegate. You just have to submit it in writing. C. Elections shall be by secret ballot. When there are more candidates for delegate or alternate delegate than the authorized number for the branch, the election shall be by ballot, and the candidates receiving the largest number of votes shall be elected. There shall be no write-in votes for candidates not officially on the ballot. Any such write-in shall not be counted, but will not invalidate the rest of the ballot. Each eligible regular member shall be entitled to one vote for each delegate or alternate position to be filled. When there are fewer or the same number of candidates as the number of delegates and alternates for which the branch is authorized, the president may declare that such persons have been elected. Adequate safeguards to ensure a fair election shall be provided, including the right of any candidate to have an observer at the counting of the votes and at any polling place. The National Executive Council is hereby empowered to adopt and promulgate rules and regulations for the conduct of all elections in the branch and state associations, which will provide such adequate safeguards. The election will be held at a regular meeting of the branch, or a branch may provide in its bylaws that ballots may also be cast at each station not more than 7 days nor less than 1 day before the regular meeting, or that the election shall be a secret mail ballot. Whenever such elections are conducted by mail ballot, the last date on which ballots must be received in order to be counted shall be considered to be the date of the election. The recording secretary shall preserve for 1 year the ballots and all other records pertaining to the election. So here we have a number of options for how we want to conduct these elections. Presumably it's up to the branch to lay out in their bylaws or to agree at a previous meeting how this is going to roll out. As far as the national convention, I think it was in the last episode that we could have one delegate for every 20 members of the branch. And so for my branch that has 1,600 members, that means we could have 80 delegates. And dude, there's no way that we're going to fill all 80 delegate slots, although that is my goal. So the bigger issue would be which ones are paid delegates. All right, moving on. Article 6. Hey, that's the end of Article 5. So it was only about... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I got to finish reading Article 5. All right, Part D. In any election of delegates to the National Association Convention, the president and secretary of the branch or state association shall inform the secretary-treasurer of the National Association in writing the name of every delegate elected through the registration procedure established by the Executive Council. If delegates to the State Association Convention are elected, the secretary will also advise the secretary of the State Association utilizing the same procedure. So there you go. You get elected to be a delegate, and then the secretary of your branch sends it in. E, elections by state associations of delegates at large and alternate delegates at large shall be as provided in the state association bylaws. Oh, you know what? At some point, I'm going to have to get a hold of my state association's bylaws because honestly, right now, I don't even know what they do. So, all right, moving on. Article 6, Officers and Elections. Section 1, the elective officers of this body shall be a president, executive vice president, secretary treasurer, assistant secretary treasurer, director of city delivery, director of safety and health, director of life insurance, director of health benefits, director of retired members who shall be a retired member, and board of trustees composed of 3 members who shall be elected for a term of office of 4 years or until their successors have been duly elected and installed, and 15 national business agents. All right, that's all the officers. The elected officers shall, by virtue of their office, be delegates to the National Convention. In addition to their salaries, all elected officers shall be entitled to reimbursement of all itemized expenses legitimately incurred in conduct of the affairs of the Union. All right, so that's pretty broad. If you are doing something for the Union, maybe that even includes like driving to and from work, then I guess you can itemize that and get reimbursed for it. If you're having lunch while you're on the clock, does that count? I don't know. I assume there's rulings on this somewhere, like how far this goes, but it says all itemized expenses legitimately incurred in conduct of the affairs of the Union. I don't know. There's definitely something worth exploring further. Section 2. Every 4 years, nominations for officers of the Union shall be called by the chairperson of the convention on the third day, Wednesday, of the convention. The chair shall call for nominations from the floor for each national office separately. Any delegate may nominate an eligible member for any one of the following national offices. And here's the big list again. Nominations of 15 national business agents shall be separately by NALC regions, as constituted effective January 1, 1974, or as realigned by the Executive Council. Any realignment of the geographic boundaries of the 15 national business agent regions must be announced by the Executive Council and must be voted on and approved by the delegates no later than the convention preceding the next convention at which nominations will take place. So there you go. We can change our national business agent boundaries or regions, but it has to be done at convention in advance. Only delegates from the appropriate NALC region may nominate candidates for the position of national business agent for such region. Nomination to the position of national business agent in each region shall be restricted to nominees whose branch is located in such appropriate NALC region. No person shall be nominated for any office without their written acceptance on the officially prescribed form, which must include the endorsement from five delegates representing five branches. All right, and again, this is for business agent. The official form shall be handed to the Secretary-Treasurer at the time of nomination, and no person shall be permitted to accept nomination for more than one office at any convention. These nominating forms shall be made immediately available by the Secretary-Treasurer for review by all candidates at the close of nominations. No second shall be necessary to a nomination, and no nominating speeches will be permitted by the chair. Oh, that's good to know. So you can just nominate somebody, and that's it. You say, I nominate James Henry as president of the NALC, and then that's it. That's where it stops. And now he is nominated, as long as he accepts the nomination. No nominee who filed acceptance with the Secretary-Treasurer shall be allowed to withdraw their name. Ah, there you go. So if he already wrote in that he's willing to accept that nomination, then boom, that's it. It's done. When there is but one candidate placed in nomination, the chairperson shall declare the election by consent. And as I understand it, at the convention 2 years ago, James Henry was nominated and nobody ran against him, and so he was declared winner of the election by consent. Section 3, the National Convention shall elect delegates to the AFL-CIO Convention, except that the President and Secretary-Treasurer shall be delegates by virtue of their office to said convention, and their names shall not be required to appear on the election ballot for delegates to the AFL-CIO Convention. Should the number of nominees exceed the number to be elected, the delegates will be elected on a plurality basis, and the listing of names of the nominees for AFL-CIO delegates shall be placed on the ballot in an order corresponding to the results of a lottery selection among the nominees. So a plurality just means the highest number. It's not the same as a majority. Like if there's 10 people voting, for a majority, you would have to get 6 votes. For a plurality, if one person got 3 votes and another person got 3 votes and another person got 4 votes, the 4 votes would be the plurality. It's just the highest number of the available votes, but you don't have to breach majority. Section 4, all regular members shall be eligible to hold any office in the National Association, except that only retired members are eligible for the office of Director of Retired Members. All right, Michael, my running mate, if you're listening, here it is. Anybody can hold any office, and only retired members are eligible for the office of Director of Retired Members. So that office is only open to retirees, but every other office is open to anybody. Any regular branch member who shall accept a except for supervisors. Yeah. Any regular member who shall accept a supervisory position in the Postal Service for any period of time, whether one day or a fraction thereof, either detailed, acting, probationary, or permanently, or who shall leave the Postal Service, shall immediately vacate any office held by them in this National Association, its branches, state associations, or its subsidiaries, the NALC Health Benefit Department, the NALC Life Insurance Department, unless the Executive Council finds the member was involuntarily separated from the service without just cause. All right, so this leaving the Postal Service, this isn't talking about retirement. This is like if you get fired or if you quit. Upon termination of such supervisory status, such member shall be ineligible for election to any office for 2 years. Upon nomination, the candidate must certify that they have not served in a supervisory capacity for 24 months prior to the nomination. Section 5. During the nomination of officers, no motion except such as refers to the nomination or to take a recess shall be entertained or debate permitted. Dude, they could have used rules like this during the convention, because there were times when people would get up and make a motion or a point of privilege, and then they would just talk about stuff that just bogged. I mean, I'm sure it was important to the person who was talking, but like, man, we're trying to conduct business here. All right, moving on. Section 6. On the opening day of the convention, the chairperson shall appoint an election commissioner and a board of tellers to act as a committee, which shall conduct the election, tabulate the votes cast, and make the count and announce the results of all calls for a division of votes during the convention. This committee shall keep itself in readiness to make such a count at all times when the convention is in session. When a teller vote is being taken, the doors of the auditorium shall be closed while the vote is taken. Nobody shall be allowed to enter or leave. The sergeant at arms shall take appropriate steps to assure that only qualified delegates are in the meeting area. So I want to talk about this one for just a sec, because this is the only rule in the Constitution that talks about who can be on the floor during the convention. And there is a guest seating area, but it's not required that the guests sit there. Guests can sit with their branch, which I was doing during the convention. Again, there's no rule about this except for what we just read, that during a teller vote, when they're actually going to be counting people, then you can't be, if you're a guest like I was, then you got to leave because only delegates can be on the floor because they're going to be counting each person. So with that being said, I was sitting with my branch during the convention, even though I was only a guest. And every time there was a vote, I was quiet. And every time there was a division, I would stay seated. And then every time there was a teller vote, which happened surprisingly often, I would leave the area and go out into the exhibit hall until it was time to come back in. Until Wednesday. Then Wednesday, near the end of the day, my branch president, who was sitting two rows in front of me, gets up and walks out. Oh, I wonder where he's going. And then a couple minutes later, a sergeant at arms comes over, taps me on the shoulder, and asks me if I'm a guest. And I said, yes, I am. And I show him my badge. And he says, well, then I've been informed that you're going to have to leave. And so I don't want to make a scene. I get up and I go over to the guest area. And as soon as I get over there, I start reading the rules in earnest. And I read through this entire Constitution. And that's why I know this part, because I read this a bunch of times. I look through all the rules for the convention because I'm a rules guy and I don't want to break the rules. But it turns out this is the only rule. And it's just that I have to leave if there's a teller vote. But there's nothing saying that I have to sit in the guest area. So I go find the sergeant at arms. And now, mind you, before I get to that, my branch president getting up and walking away, and then the sergeant at arms coming up, that's not a coincidence, right? I was told directly, not by him, of course, that, yeah, he went and told the sergeant at arms to remove me. Now, this is the leader of my branch. Did he come and talk to me and say, hey, I don't think you should be sitting here? No, he didn't. Did he tell me that, hey, I think you're breaking the rules? No, he didn't. He went and found the sergeant at arms and had the sergeant at arms remove me. And then once I checked the rules, I went and found the sergeant at arms. And I said, hey, man, you know, we're all stewards here. And so you know that the first rule of just cause is there a rule? Or the first test of just cause, is there a rule? And I've been looking through these rules and I don't think there's a rule that says I can't sit with my branch. And so he starts looking into it. And while he's looking into it, the session adjourns for the day. And so he's like, hey, I'm going to get to the bottom of this and make sure, find me tomorrow morning and you know, we'll get it squared away. So the next morning I come, I find the guy and he says, yeah, absolutely. You can totally sit with your branch. And so I did, went back and sat right back down two rows behind the president again. And it's just such a chicken shit thing to do, you know, to kick me out of my own branch. For what reason? He never talked to me about it. I don't know. Just pettiness is the way it seems. But there I was, sitting right back behind him. You're not going to hold me down that easy. All right, moving on. Section 7. On the fourth day of each biennial convention, the chairperson shall appoint a national election committee consisting of not less than 5 members, none of who shall be candidates for a national office, who shall oversee the conduct of the election of national officers. The members of the National Election Committee shall elect a chairperson from among the members and must retain the services of an independent, impartial balloting association to assist in the preparation, distribution, collection, and tabulation of ballots. The members of the National Election Committee shall be recompensed for their time lost and expenses. Recompensed means I give you money. Section 8. As soon as practicable after the convention at which nominations for national officers have been made, the National Secretary-Treasurer shall furnish to the National Election Committee a list of all members eligible to vote. To be so eligible, a member must be in good standing as of June 1st of the election year. There shall be one membership-wide ballot issued in each of the 15 NALC regions authorized and established elsewhere in this Constitution, reflecting the names of all nominees for the positions of president, executive, and here's this big list again of all the people. And then, of course, the business agent for the appropriate region. The National Election Committee shall then be responsible for mailing ballots to all eligible members as soon as possible. You know, this feels like a pretty short timeline because we have the convention in August, and then they're going to get this big list compiled, get the candidates out, get the ballots printed, and then the voting, well, I'm sure they're going to say down here when the voting happens, but there's not a big lead time. Section 9, the listing of the names of the nominees for all national offices shall be placed on the ballot in an order corresponding to the results of a lottery selection among the nominees for each office. Section 10, ballots shall be accompanied by a copy of printed voting instructions and two envelopes. The larger envelope shall be postage prepaid and shall be pre-addressed to a post office box established by the National Election Committee. The smaller envelope shall be used for securing the ballot within the return envelope and shall have no markings on it. Section 11. All regular members shall be entitled to one vote for each office to be filled. The voter shall indicate their choice for each of the officers by following the procedure established by the National Election Committee as set forth in the ballot instructions. The voter shall then seal the ballot in the smaller envelope, enclose this envelope within the large one, and mail it to the post office box printed on the larger envelope. Write-in votes shall not be valid. No markings shall be made on the ballot or the smaller envelope other than as indicated in this section. So there is a controversy about our previous ballots that they were numbered and that the number corresponded to each employee, and so you would know who sent in that ballot. Based on reading this, I would guess that it was that larger outer envelope that had the employee identification on it, but I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure this is part of what David Noble is suing about, but honestly, I haven't followed that super closely. Section 12. To be valid, ballots must be received by the time and date specified by the National Election Committee in the printed instructions, which will be at least 18 and no later than 21 days from the final date upon which ballots were mailed by the National Election Committee. On the date and at the time so specified, the ballots will be removed from the post office box by the National Election Committee and the balloting association retained by it, with at least three members of the National Election Committee being present. Section 13. The ballot shall be counted by the balloting association under the supervision of the National Election Committee. Each candidate shall be entitled to have one observer present during the counting of ballots. Observers present for each respective candidate at the counting of ballots shall not be permitted to interfere in any manner with the counting and recording of same. Observers shall abide by all policies and rules adopted by the balloting and election committees. In elections for all offices, the candidate or candidates where the election is for a group of identical offices receiving the largest number of votes shall be declared elected. So again, this is plurality rather than majority. The final tabulation shall be certified by the balloting association to the National Election Committee. Said results shall be promptly certified by the National Election Committee to the incumbent Secretary-Treasurer, and the results of the election shall be officially announced by the Secretary-Treasurer in the next edition of the Postal Record. Section 14. The National Election Committee shall be authorized to decide by majority vote the validity of the ballots. All appeals in connection with the validity of the ballots or the election must be filed by a member in good standing with the National Election Committee not later than the 20th day of the month in which the announcements of the results is published in the postal record. Such appeals must be in affidavit form and must specify the basis of the appeal in detail. The National Election Committee shall pass on such appeals within 3 weeks after receipt thereof and may hold hearings if it deems necessary. The decision of the National Election Committee upon said appeal shall be final and binding. Section 15. In the case of a tie vote for a particular office, another election for that office shall be held among the candidates for whom an equal number of votes is cast. That would be a runoff election. In the event of the death of a nominee for any office, the incumbent executive council shall be empowered in its own discretion to take such action as it deems necessary, including the holding of new nominations and elections for the affected office or offices. I feel like if there's like three people running and the top vote getter dies, then it should just go to the second top vote getter. But I don't know, maybe there's some reason that this policy is in place that doesn't just work that way. Oh, actually, I can think of a situation right now. So let's say you have, well, like let's say in our national election, right, we'll have Kamala, even better. Let's say we had Joe Biden running against Donald Trump. And then we get to the election and we're ready to count votes and then Joe Biden dies. So if it just went to the next high, and let's assume Joe Biden got the most votes. If it just goes to the next highest vote getter, it would go to Donald Trump. And I can see why some people would think that that's a suboptimal solution. So similar idea here, I think, that, hey, maybe it's better if we don't do it that way. All right, Section 16. Upon the certification of the election results by the balloting association, the National Election Committee shall deposit in such safe receptacle as may be designated by the Secretary-Treasurer all ballots and records pertaining to the election where they shall be preserved for 1 year, after which they may be destroyed upon the written authorization of the Secretary-Treasurer. Section 17. The newly elected officers shall assume their offices as soon after 45 days from the date of the certification of results by the National Election Commission as is practicable. So it did not say, that's the end of Article 6 and the end of what I'm going to be reading today, but it did not say that the voting would happen in November or any specified time. It was just that it would happen within a specified time. So yeah, I'm not sure exactly when that voting is going to happen. There's probably considerations like how long it takes to print the ballots and get the lists and so on. So regardless, people who are serious about running for office, like James Henry of the Concerned Letter Carriers, they're campaigning now. So that's the process. You know, you can't just wait until you get nominated and then in the couple weeks you have, try to run a national campaign. That's not going to work. Anyway, all right, so that is Articles 5 and 6. Thank you guys for listening, and more.